Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track. Listen, we're your weekly source for performance information. Get in touch with us. Questions, comments, smart remarks, just like the man said. We answer every single message we get. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Follow me on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, Instagram, and our YouTube channel. You can just search out Crush Performance. Today, a really, really big show. We got to get it underway because we don't have enough time, I think, to cover everything we want to do. Well, listen, last week we ran out of time talking baseball. So today, as promised, I'm going to go over some of the numbers that came out of 2018. Listen, I don't think there is a professional game that has ever changed as much, as fast as professional baseball. We're going to get to that in a second. And of course, with the NFL Combine underway, we have to talk some football. I love the Combine. I love the NFL. I love the game of football. We're going to talk about injury rates. We're going to talk about career lengths. We're going to talk about unguaranteed contracts, but we're going to talk about the power of the Combine, which brings us to our text question of the day. The question is, the NFL Combine has been heralded as one of the most intense player evaluations in all of sport. What do you think is the toughest physical challenge out there? You may want to share the toughest physical challenge you've been through, but what do you think the toughest physical testing challenge might be? And if you've encountered one yourself, let us know. We're going to be picking people from the text pool. I will tell you this. I actually did the entire NHL entry draft combine testing. And of course, we were prepared for it. I didn't train for it like we would train the players for it. To get prepared, but I did okay, but it was pretty hard, man. Over the course of 2 days, we did it like with typical team would, with VO2 max, 30-second wind gates, sit-ups. We went A to Z on the whole thing, and it was pretty tough. But the NFL Combine, in terms of breaking players down and evaluating players, I do believe, and I'll say this right now, Connor, you can let me know what you think. I think the NFL Combine might be one of the most excruciating, toughest player evaluations in all of sport.
Yeah, I mean, and it is physical. Obviously, you see the tests that they do, and that might be the easiest part for the players because that's what they like to do. That stuff's kind of fun, and you can physically train for it. Then they have the Wonderlic, where you have to go in there and do this test, and you have a time limit. There's some stress there because it always seems to leak. The scores always come out. And then just the grading from these franchises and, you know, the interviews, the awkward questions. It's just a job interview that you're basically doing with 30 NFL teams. 32, sorry. So it is an interesting process for sure, physically and mentally.
Yep, agreed. Hey, here's one that just came in. CrossFit games, no contest, it's hardest. Hey, the CrossFit, that is tough. I'll give you that one right there. But in terms of getting evaluated, getting broken down, getting picked apart, hey, we're going to talk about the Combine and some of the great scores later in the show. We're also going to look at an incredible device that is allowing us to help prevent concussions. It's called TopSpin 360. We're going to talk to the good people from this company. They are just down at the Combine, as a matter of fact, talking to the NFL about the possible applications here for football players. This goes beyond football, of course. We're looking at all contact sports. We're looking at military, our first responders. This is a very, very interesting device. We're going to talk to the guys from TopSpin 360 later in the show. But right now, I want to follow up on my promise. Listen, last week we ran out of time. We were talking about baseball and how much the game has changed. And it really, really has. We had a great seminar down at United Sport and Cycle here talking about pitching and athlete development. And these are important conversations because the injury rates in baseball, they're not getting better. They're not getting better at the professional level, and they're not getting better. They're, in fact, not even, they're getting worse at the developmental levels. And just to give you an idea, there was a really interesting study that was trying to decipher what's going on in terms of the injuries in professional baseball. And it looked at the injury rates and the trends over 18 seasons, from 1998 to 2015. Connor, I'm going to challenge you with a question, and anybody out there, let me know what you guys think. Or what your guess might be, if you want to get to me really quick at 101260. On average, how much do you think between 1998 and 2015, major league teams, the 30 major league teams spent on players who couldn't play the game annually?
Man, I mean, I Millions.
Okay, I'm going to let that one simmer. Think about that. You guys, get to us if you have an answer. Let us know. Again, the question is, between 1998 and 2015, annually, per year, how much do you think the 30 Major League Baseball teams spent on players who couldn't play? Okay, let me know your guess. We'll put that one into the text prize pool for sure, because the numbers are outstanding. So what's going on in baseball? At the end of each year, I break down the season to see what went on, what's going on. Well, some interesting things. I'll just throw out a few numbers to kind of give you an idea how much the game is changing. It's not only changing how we play the game, it's changing how we coach the game, but it's also changing now how we're preparing players for the game. So listen to this. 800 fewer balls in play in 2018. Now, that doesn't seem like a big number. You know, over, if you think of how many baseballs were actually put in play over the course of the season, but that is 6,000 fewer than 4 years ago and 11,000 fewer than 10 years ago. So you guys can see a trend there. There's way fewer balls being put in play. And at the same time, for the first time in Major League history, we had more strikeouts than hits. And again, I have to stress this. For the first time in Major League history, we had more strikeouts than hits in the game, fewer balls in play, more strikeouts than hits for the first time ever. As a matter of fact, there was 41,207 strikeouts, 41,019 hits. Now listen, go back to 2017, hits led by 2,100 pretty much. In 2006, hits led by over 13,000. Another incredible trend in the game that you have to pay attention to. If you're a player or a coach, you need to know these numbers. Listen to this, 8,000 shifts. 8,000 defensive shifts in 2018 might be one of the biggest changes in terms of analytical data that we saw in the game. It's a 30% increase over 2017. And if you go back to 2013, where the shifts really started getting used, it's a 500% increase from 2013. And those defensive shifts, of course, are one of the big reasons we're seeing fewer balls in play. A ground ball right now in baseball is almost a guaranteed out. Almost a guaranteed out. And that's why you see everybody swinging for the fence. That's why we see more strikeouts than hits. And that's why we're seeing, of course, the trends in how we're now coaching the game. Does it make sense if you're seeing more defensive shifts to maybe hit the ball the other way? I mean, again, it's not as easy as it might sound, but here for the first time in baseball history, players, hitters are being challenged to hit either over the fence just to put a ball in play, or to hit the ball the other way. If I were working with hitters right now, which we are, we're really, really working on our guys being able to hit the ball at will anywhere they want. You see some of these players just have a great spread spray pattern in terms of where they hit the ball. Those guys are hard to defend against. And that's one of the changes we're going to see moving forward. Hitters, beware, okay? Be able to hit the opposite way. It is a mandatory now. And if you want to make yourself valuable in the game of baseball, oh, there's a big in right there. So listen, 267, another number, just a cool number. Yankees team home run record. Okay. It's an all-time home run record in Major League Baseball. And for the third consecutive year, here's another interesting number. 2016 was the first time this happened. There were more than 100 Major League hitters who had 20 or more home runs. The first time in history, Major League history, there were more than 100 players was 2016. 2017 and 2018, once again, there were more than 100 players who hit 20 or more home runs. Again, that's that swinging for the fence. That's that defensive shift. That's analytics changing the game. And then here's one more that I just want to share, because this one is actually pretty amazing. Connor, do you know what Ricky Henderson's stolen base record is for a single season?
120-something?
Yeah, 130, which that's his single season, single player, single season stolen base record. Guess what the stolen base record was for 2018 based on team stolen bases? I'll tell you, Cleveland Indians led the way. The entire team stole 130 bases. So Ricky Henderson in 1982 single-handedly stole 130 bases, and the Cleveland Indians last year led the entire league at 130. So interesting times. Again, these are very important numbers that have come out of baseball. I wanted to share them. We ran out of time last week, but listen, the game is changing. Here's one last thing before we cut to break, okay? Throwing a fastball over 92 miles an hour, that's the breaking point. And The average fastball in Major League Baseball last year was 93.3 miles an hour. The average high school drafted player, 95.7. Go back and look at how many high school players are actually who were actually drafted in the first round are playing Major League Baseball or ever have. Okay, and this is where we start talking about the impact of too much velocity too soon. It seems to be almost a death sentence. We're going to get into that in shows to come. All right, so that is our recap of 2018. I promised everybody we'd get to that, so thanks for all the texts and messages. Again, you guys, let me know. I'm going to announce this right after the break. Listen, how much money did Major League Baseball teams, the 30 teams, spend on players who couldn't play annually between 1998 and 2015. We'll get to that, your text, and we're going to look at a very interesting piece of equipment that may help us prevent concussions in sport right after this on Crush Performance.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Hey, get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. Questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic or a question you'd like us to answer, we'll get to it. And if we like it, listen, we've dedicated segments, even entire episodes to your ideas. So please write to us. We answer every single message that we get. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, on Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel, search out Crush Performance. Hey, we're just rocking it out today. Thanks for all these texts. Again, the text question of the day, in honor of the great NFL Combine, what do you think is one of the toughest physical challenges out there, the physical test? Or what is a test that you've been through that it was really, really difficult? I was talking about my endeavor to take on the NHL entry draft protocol. I did fairly well. I will say this, after the 30-second win gate, I crushed it, man. I hammered it hard. I do a lot of cycling, so I was ready for it, and I was strong at the time. I was doing pretty good. So my power scores were great. My fatigue index was great. About 2 minutes after the test, I passed out cold. A story for another day, but it was difficult. Some great, great texts coming in. The VO2 max test looks like something designed to see who quits, but the NFL combine, the catch drill for receivers, quarterbacks deliver in different ways, so your hands need to be ready. I agree. That catch drill is all telling, and you are under the microscope there. A great one. Jeff, I would vote to go to an iron distance triathlon. Listen, I've done the sprint triathlons. I swim like a tugboat. I have nothing but the fullest respect for any, well, triathletes, period. But Ironman, you guys are different animals. Total respect there. Jordan, one of the toughest physical tests. Agreed, 100%. Earlier on, somebody mentioned CrossFit for sure. Cycling stage races are brutal, from Peter St. Albert. The Tour de France, it Tour d'Italia or local, the BC bike races. Yes, very, very difficult. And then we also had a question. My other question is, we were sort of reviewing 2018 baseball, talking about the injury rate. So there was a great study done looking at the injury trends in baseball over 18 seasons, 1998 to 2015. Again, I asked you guys to see if you could guess how many millions of dollars teams spent annually over those 18 seasons on players who couldn't play, as we try to get a grasp of the injury rates and why they're happening. Well, this is a great guess from Gord. Dr. Evil said $1 billion. Of course, Gord, love it. Gord guessed $250 million. Not quite. $423.3 million. Listen to this. Over those 18 seasons, teams paid $7.6 billion, Dr. Evil. Billion dollars. On players who couldn't play. Now, we're not so worried about the money. We're interested about the fact that players are breaking under our care, and we're trying to fix it. But those numbers are astounding. So when we talk about injuries, you guys know that we are passionate about finding solutions. Today, we're shifting a bit to the contact sports. We're shifting a bit to the NFL. We're going to talk about the combine coming up right now. But there is a very, very interesting a piece of equipment that's allowing us to potentially help prevent head injuries and concussions. We know a lot about why they're happening now. We're getting a clearer picture on the long-term issues. We're getting a clearer picture on proper management, but prevention is key. Joining us right now, Dr. Theo Versteeg from Topspin Technologies. Theo, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate me taking me on.
No, I'm so glad you're here today. You know, I know you guys. I don't know if you're still there. You guys were just at the combines doing some work with the NFL. We have some friends who were there that sort of connected us. And I've been watching your piece of equipment with great interest here over the last little while. I heard about it actually at a head injury clinic in Calgary, at the University of Calgary, a while back.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I was really interested to talk to you guys. So when I heard that you guys were there, I just had to get you on. So thanks for coming on, Teo.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Well, listen, as I mentioned, you know, we're getting a real good understanding of how, when, and why the head injuries are happening. I think the studies have really painted a pretty good picture there. But now, we're sort of on the side where how do we prevent? And that's kind of what you guys are all about. Maybe give us a little background on the TopSpin 360.
Sure. I mean, probably for those who haven't seen it or seen it in motion, to describe it, it's essentially a modified football helmet with a post coming out from the top, which is has a centrally mounted axis, and protruding from that is an arm with a small weight on it. And basically, the athlete puts the helmet on, straps up the chin strap, and then using specific contractions of the neck, they get that weight spinning around that central axis. So it's almost like a hula hoop for the head. And then the faster you get that weight spinning, the more centripetal force is generated. So the stronger the neck needs to be to keep that weight spinning, and the faster the neck muscles have to respond and to react to constantly stabilize the head in space.
I really like this concept. You know, typically in the past, you know, we've talked about upper body strength. We've talked about, you know, the visual, peripheral vision and being aware of that. But typically, you know, when it comes to neck strength, we've got all these exercises, but the four-way neck exercises are kind of sort of the staple when we talk about it. This is a whole new dynamic to that. And I really, really like it. It seems like it has a larger practical application in the real world.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, in comparison to the four-way neck, I'm always reminded of if all you had is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you're looking at the four-way neck, that's really been, up until now, the only way of improving neck strength with any form of efficiency. But the problem with that is the four-way neck, in essence, is you're taking a heavy weight and you're pushing your head against it, which will improve your neck's ability to take a heavy weight and push against it. But it won't necessarily improve its ability to respond or react and to absorb a blow that would cause concussion. So in order to do that, you need to train the muscles, eccentrically as opposed to concentrically. And you also have to focus on the fast twitch muscle fibers for the more true multi-planar strengthening. Because, the other thing we know about the biomechanics of concussion is that they're not coming just straight head-on or straight from the side. It's any off-tangent angle that can cause a concussion. And specifically, rotation is a common force that will lead to concussion. So, the four-way neck will improve your ability to push forward, push back, and push to either side, but it doesn't improve its ability to push at a 45-degree angle or to improve rotational neck strength. Or, and it doesn't improve the ability to quickly and reflectively contract. In fact, there's actually evidence that would indicate that training on the four-way neck machine ends up inhibiting or decreasing the neck's proprioception.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less aware of where it is in space. And although you're getting stronger, those muscles are becoming less responsive. And they are definitely slowing down because traditional neck strengthening involves taking your type 2B fibers, so your super fast twitch fibers, and slowing down into the bigger, bulkier type 2A. I mean, it'll certainly help improve neck girth, which will probably have a role, but it'll slow down the contraction velocity, which when you're trying to protect from a sudden impulse that will cause concussion, you need those muscles firing as quickly as possible.
I like we're talking with Dr. Teo Versteeg from TopSpin Technologies. You can check out their website. Go to www.topspin.com. There's great research there. I really like what you're saying here, and I love the science, and I like how practical it is. This is the kind of thing that really translates into the real world of sport. And you're right. Isn't it interesting? We get so caught up in getting, especially in the football world, where it's sort of that big, strong, beefy weight room mentality. We get so caught up in getting just big and strong that we sometimes fail to understand that can actually work against you. And this is a classic example. I like how you've sort of framed that up, that, you know, that the four-way strengthening can actually reduce the function of what's supposed to happen in terms of those neck muscles.
That's right. Yeah. There's evidence that traditional neck strength or traditional weight training in general inhibits the natural protective stretch reflexes. So you get less of a reflex reaction to a sudden stretch, the stretch shorten cycle. Whereas if you try to train the muscles to protect against concussion, you need to facilitate those. You don't want to inhibit those. So that's the advantage with the Toscon 360 is that each time that's the weight is spinning around, you're actually, the faster you go, the more you can no longer consciously do it, and you have to really rely on the neuromuscular kind of reaction and just feed into that and facilitate that stretch reflex to get that going around. It's very akin to plyometrics or ballistic type training for the neck.
I love it. It makes a ton of sense. Dr. Vestiga, I'm telling you right now, I love everything about it. Hey, I'm very interested. So I've watched the video online. I love the device. It makes a lot of sense. But I was really, as I was watching this, I'm going, I wonder how you guys wound up here. So if you could just maybe take a couple minutes and sort of take us down the timeline to how you guys wound up with this, and then we could talk about how the device actually works, because I'm really interested in how you guys got here, because I love it.
Sure. Yeah. It's a true Canadian story. And that it happened back in 2011 with the Sidney Crosby concussion that kept him out for almost a year. And my background, I'm a physiotherapist, a sport medicine physiotherapist for over 20 years now, and a sport concussion specialist. And my business partner, I played football back at in university. And at the time, he was our strength and conditioning coach. So between the two of us, we met up again playing rec hockey. And so, like I said, the Canadian story, after playing rec hockey, go to the bar.
Yeah.
And we were watching Don Cherry show me the Sidney Crosby concussion. And with my physio background, his strength and conditioning background, we got to saying that, if his neck was throbbing, like his head just whipped around. And, it was a big hit, but certainly, we've all seen much bigger hits that don't take players out for almost a year. And so, again, it got me kind of thinking about neck strength. And back when I played, we had, the four-way neck machine. And it got me thinking with my physio background, I thought, yeah, that'll improve neck strength. But it doesn't, that's not sport-specific. That's not going to help you in any way if a sudden, blindsided hit comes in. Like, you really need to strengthen, reflexively and fast twitch and eccentrically. And it's very difficult to strengthen that eccentrically safely using the four-way neck machine, especially at any kind of pace. As well, it doesn't improve rotational neck strength at all, which is another, classic with boxing, the glass jaw is a sudden rotational hit that'll knock the player out. So, yeah, so that kind of got me thinking. It's probably spent 4 or 5 months just working on kind of different prototypes and different approaches. And as when I was working on a previous iteration that I came across that serendipitously had a device that was doing centripetal training. Like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been looking for. And the other thing is, if you're trying to train the neck muscles to absorb a blow that would cause concussion, you really don't want to cause a concussion when you're trying to train that way. So it was a bit of a tricky problem to get around, which with the training on the Toscon, you've got purely self-generated centripetal force. As soon as you lose coordination or, theoretically get dizzy or fatigue out, the weight just stops spinning. The resistance is taken away almost instantly. So, from what we've seen, it's actually safer than any other strengthening approaches for use on the neck compared to the four-way neck, or there's a few kind of weighted straps that you can use. This approach physiologically would be a lot safer. So yeah, we'll see what kind of how things go from there.
Great. Sorry, I just had a little mic mishap there. You were talking Dr. Theo Versteeg from Topspin Technologies. This is fantastic, and I love everything about it. And there's been a lot of research, and on your website, you have a lot of the data out there. But one that really caught me, my attention was the neck strength, the proactive factor reducing risk for concussions in high school sports. And the quote that you guys sort of focused on there was, for every 1 pound increase in neck strength, odds of concussion decrease 5%. Dr. Vestiga, that's a big number.
It is. And that's, again, looking at over 6,700 high school athletes, and that was after correcting, controlling for gender and sport. So That's a really significant factor when it comes to protecting the against concussion. And that alone from the research is the understanding why females are at much higher risk for concussion than males in even the same sport. So I've seen numbers where in, again, kind of younger high school age hockey players that in any year, males have a 12% rate of concussion and females have over 17% rate of concussion. And again, other sports are even, Lynette apparently is even higher, closer to 20%. So it's just, a really significant issue. And the interesting thing with hockey is that, the most common cause of concussion in the male sport is from body checking. And in the female game, they eliminate body checking, yet they still have a much higher rate of concussion. And the same goes for soccer, where it's the exact same sport, but the women have a much higher rate of concussion. And the current understanding is, again, it's because not only women have gotten more slender and weaker necks, but arguably they're less responsive. And so, with hockey, if they kind of lose their feet from under them, they're a lot more likely to have their head whip back and smack into the ice. Likewise with with soccer, they don't quite have the strength and stability to prevent from going up to head the ball, a lot of head motion and head and neck motion.
Right.
So it's neck strength is it's one of the what we would call the low hanging fruit when looking at prevention. But again, the research would indicate that just grabbing a heavy weight and lifting it with your neck will get you a stronger neck, but it may not protect you against concussion.
Yeah, great stuff. And I would suggest everybody go to the website. It's Topspin.
Topspin.com.
Yep, Topspin360.com. Yeah, I apologize. Hey, punch the research button there and go watch the video. The video is fantastic. So let me ask you this. We just sort of connected here through your attendance at the NFL Combines. I'd like just to talk to you quickly here about the ties to the NFL. This sounds very, very promising.
Yeah, so we ended up at the NFL Combine, but I guess more excitingly for us, we were this year's winners of the NFL First and Future competition for innovations to advance athletes' health and safety. So it was, really exciting for us as a company. Between the two streams, there was the health and safety stream, and then there was the punt analytics stream, and they had over 1,000 applicants. So we were just excited to be a top five and going to get invited to the pitch competition. And as it turns out, we ended up performing the pitch and we ended up winning. So
congratulations. That is fantastic.
Much. Yeah. And so with that, we also got two tickets to the Super Bowl. So, childhood dream, just tick that off the bucket list. Arguably could have been a more exciting game, but hey, it was still the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. No, congratulations on that, and rightfully so. This is going to be, I think, something that we can see at all levels of sport. I think this is something that's really, really practical. High schools, we can even see some of maybe the Pop Warner minor football organizations getting into it. Certainly our college and professional players, without question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely, I think there's a significant role and opportunity with at the professional level, just training the neck muscles to respond and react more appropriately than just sheer bulk and volume. But actually, we feel as a company, and the research would suggest, I think the greatest potential would be in high school and in youth sports, and specifically female sports, because like I said, it seems to be neck strength and function seems to be a big factor as to why they're at a much higher risk of concussion.
Great stuff, Dr. Versteeg. What is next for you guys here as we head into the NFL season and football slowly starts getting underway here?
Yeah, so essentially we're just trying to, again, kind of reach out to basically college teams and above. We've got kind of a few NFL teams that we're in discussions with now and getting them on board. Actually, the first NFL team to try the Thompson 360 was the Philadelphia Eagles. They won the Super Bowl, so that was, I don't know if correlation may not lead to causation, but we're pretty excited about that fact.
Absolutely. Did you guys get a ring?
No, not yet.
that's on the next bucket list. Excellent
that's
stuff.
Right.
Yeah, great. Excellent stuff. Hey, listen, Dale, thank you so much for coming on short notice. Hey, we're going to look forward to staying in touch with you as the football, soccer, hockey seasons, roll out time after time. This is a very, very important conversation on our show, and prevention is king. There's no question. Congratulations, and thanks again for coming on.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you soon. There you go, everybody. Fantastic conversation. And listen, again, topspin360.com is the website. If you have an athlete that's involved in any of the contact sports, and even in soccer, listen, USA Soccer last year banned heading of the ball under age 11, and they want to push it up to 13 just to protect our young athletes. And it makes a lot of sense. We've seen banning of body checking in hockey. There's serious talk in football about limiting or eliminating contact at the developmental levels. What do you think about that? Listen, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to follow up on this conversation. We're going to get to the NFL Combine. We're going to talk about some of the injury rates, the length of careers, and how prevention strategies like this, the Topspin 360, may help our young athletes and our pros play healthy and live healthy. That's coming up right after this on Crush Performance.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are rocking and rolling here. This is Crush Performance. We are winding down the clock. Crushing the Con Man, joining you. We are your weekly source for performance information. Listen, coming off just a fantastic conversation, you guys know if you listen to the show, we are all about prevention, injury prevention for our athletes. We will look high and low and around every corner to find new innovative things that are helping us keep our athletes safe. And we just had a great conversation with Theo Verstegen, Dr. Theo Verstegen from Topspin 360. They're the winner of the 2019 NFL's First and Future Award. Congratulations to those guys, a Canadian company that has come up with a very innovative way to train athletes, strengthen neck and neck muscles, and also increasing awareness reaction time of those muscles to help prevent concussions and head injuries. Just fantastic stuff. Again, if you want to go back and get the podcast, share this one with your teammates, your team doctors, your family, your friends. You can go to crushperformance.com. You can sign up for the podcast, subscribe to our newsletter, and get all this great information. But that's really good. Connor, I'm all about this. This is a great, great award for a Canadian company, but such a smart approach for helping reduce risk of injuries.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we're trying to do here going forward. I mean, it's only come to light the past 10, 15 years, the concussions, and we're starting to see the long-term effects. Anything we can do to minimize that, we have to put all our, you know, just put all our focus and attention on that, I think.
Yep, we do a lot in terms of physical preparation now, and of course, rule changes. We've seen, as we mentioned, a ban on heading in USA Soccer, heading the ball for players under 11. We've seen a ban on body checking in hockey. There's talk about flag football or no contact football for Pop Warner, developmental young kids who play football. I can see it actually happening.
Now, this might be out of the box thinking here, but with football, what if we were to play tackle football, taking away the helmets? And you look at rugby. I know a lot of people who play rugby. The tackling in that sport is pure. It's taking the guy to the ground. You're not necessarily hitting, you're not jacking anyone up, but you're tackling. I wonder if that would be a way to look at it, or, you know, minimize the helmet, take away the shield, put on just kind of the smaller helmet and decrease people from leading with their head.
Go back to the old leather caps, so
exactly,
to speak.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, interesting you say that, and that is a possibility. It'd be great to get some people in the know thinking about that, and I'm sure there are. I'm going to start investigating that for you because I know that discussion has been floating around. I was lucky enough to be in New Zealand here this last year and got to meet with some of the All Blacks and some of the people in that rugby world. Concussions are an issue in rugby. So let's make sure that's crystal clear. It's not as prevalent, though. You're absolutely right. So here's an interesting thing. If you remember back a few months ago, we had Dr. Martin Mrazek on the show talking about head injuries, concussions. He's one of the leading minds. He was actually at the NFL Combines right now talking about their program. He mentioned an interesting thing. The rule changes in terms of head-to-helmet first, helmet-to-helmet contact, spearing. It's definitely decreased the amount of concussions and head contacts, but it's also potentially shifted the way guys take down the athletes. Now we're seeing an increase in lower body injuries. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, that's another area you want to get away from, right? The lower body injuries.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
A lot of times I think the fines later might not impact a player how they're thinking going into the game. Right. It's like, if I get fined, so be it. But that extra 15 yards, that can be a game breaker. You're going to hear from the coaches. Your teammates are going to be upset with you. So you don't necessarily want to do that either. That's just kind of a a benefit of trying to eliminate the shots to the head.
Yep. Culture, grassroots training is going to be important as well. A discussion we will continue with. Our text question of the day, everybody, 10-12-60. A lot of great text coming in. Thanks, everybody who's written in. We will be giving away a $25 deluxe burger gift certificate. We've got 2 Marmot Basin Lift passes. We've got a couple of Snow Valley Day passes as well. We're going to pick people at random who wrote in today. The question is, what is the toughest physical challenge in sport? What is the toughest physical challenge you've encountered? Connor, I sort of shared my NHL combine test. Have you gone through a test that was grueling and brutal?
The beep test. Maybe not the best athletes, but man, they could do such a good job of that. So the beep test was always one that I found fun to do.
Yeah, interesting. Coming in on the text line. Crush, a tough test my daughters had to do when they were 14 was the beep test. They had to do short sprints repeatedly, catch their breath, and do it again and again. That was tough. There's a couple of different versions when it comes to the beep test, but regardless of which one you use and implement, it is difficult, especially if you push and go the distance. Girls were gasping for air and throwing up. Not sure if it should have been done with 14-year-olds. Yes, it should be. Yes, it should be done with 14-year-olds. Absolutely. It should be done with even younger kids. Maybe not to that degree, but I'm just telling you, cardiovascular fitness, we're going downhill, and it is one of the keys to staying healthy and optimizing sport performance. Thanks, Pickles. That's a great text, an absolute great text. Another one I wanted to share here is, as we get into the NFL Combine discussion here, hey guys, I caught some of the NFL Combine, mostly to watch the players I'm interested in, but it amazes me when they do the bench press reps. Unbelievable strength from Scuba Steve. Steve, I agree. I love watching the NFL Combine. Let's get it straight. These guys have been finely tuned for these particular tests. And when we talk about the bench press, if you're not familiar with the NFL Combine bench press, it's 225 pounds or 102 kilos as many times as you possibly can. And, you know, Connor, the NFL Combine can change the future for some of these young athletes. If you show well here, it could change your life.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the top prospects for this, I think the key is just not to go there and fail. You can be average, and then the scouts are going to go back to your tape and see what it is. But it is crazy. I've been watching the bench press as well, and so far only quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends have gone, if you're listening to the show Saturday. N'Keal Harry, who was born in Canada, I believe, and DK Metcalf of Mississippi. Wide receivers, 27 reps each. I mean, these guys are machines. They're benching more than tight ends, so that's always a fun one to watch, and I'm just glad I don't have to do that.
Right, no kidding.
I don't think I could do one.
Hey, these guys can change their lives here. If you look at some of the incredible feats that we've seen so far in the NFL Combine, look at Garrett Bradbury, offensive lineman. He ran a 4.92 40. This guy is huge, running a 4.92 40. He did the bench press. He had the second highest in NFL history, 34 reps, 225 pounds for 34 reps, the second in history. Look at, we talk about D-line, big guy again, you know, 6'1", 287 pounds. He has a 38-inch vertical, and for the broad jump, a 10-foot, 1-inch broad jump. That's Ed Oliver, D-line. And this is a guy who came in sort of, they thought, undersized. He totally eliminated, absolutely 100%, totally eliminated any skepticism on his physical abilities just by his performance at these tests.
Yeah, and that's a guy who's already considered to be a early to mid first round pick.
Right.
So when you add that, and these tests also can be bad. The one guy who always I go back to is Matt Jones. He was a quarterback at Arkansas. He went to the combine, had a 40-inch vertical. He ran the 40 in 4.37. The Jacksonville Jaguars ended up taking him in the first round as a receiver. He was out of the league in 3 years. So sometimes you have to watch the stats and be a little skeptical, because running around in shorts and a tank top don't match doing it on the field.
Well, and we've seen guys who've gone undrafted who turn out to be some of the greatest players in the game. Some guys that weren't even invited to the combine turn out to be game changers historically in football, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them out there, guys that stand out. You look at Antonio Gates, who's a basketball player. So for that reason, he's not going to get to go to the combine. Rod Smith, a wide receiver for the Denver Broncos. So many of these guys. How about Tom Brady? He was drafted, went to the combine, but was a late round pick because, you know, physically he wasn't standing out. He's had an okay career.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic stuff. And the combine is so much fun to watch. We've got a few more days left as things start wrapping up there. But I'm telling you right now, you know, if we look at the game of football, there's got to be some changes. I mean, if you look at the average career for the major sports, football has the lowest career lifespan in all of the major sports. It's average 3.3 years. Kickers, 4.87 years. You look at quarterbacks, 4.4 years. Offensive line, it decreases. There's a drop here. Offensive line, 3.8 years. Defensive line, only three. But get this. I wouldn't think this. It's kind of counterintuitive. I would have thought that the corner guys, the wide receivers, have a longer lifespan. They don't. The corner is only 2.9 years. Wide receivers, 2.8. And these are the kind of things we're trying to trend away from. But just goes to show how brutal the game is. And when you see these guys get injured and their careers are ending early, these are non-guaranteed contracts. And I think that's something that's got to change. The CBA comes up in, what, 2021, I believe, or 2020. There's going to be some big changes. There has to be, I think. Look, the NFL broke $14 billion in revenue last year. The players don't even get half of that based on this CBA. And when you look at these players who are out of the game because of injuries and they can't walk and they're having trouble playing, paying their bills, there's no reason for that, I think. And the conversation we'll have as we get closer to the football season. But I think that's an important conversation to have, Connor.
Yeah, and I mean, you see all these players that are trying to get that guaranteed money. And you know why? Because they have no chance. They can cut you. They don't owe you any money. So you want that money down at the start of the contract. You have that money to put away. So you're not going to miss out on anything. And you're right. That's going to be something that the Players Association is definitely going to look at. You look at the other major sports where it is guaranteed. Why not football?
Yeah.
If a GM gives you that contract, that's what they should be paying you.
I agree 100%. Guaranteed contracts? Hell yes. You better believe it. I'm all for it. All right, everybody. Listen, we are out of time. We could go on and on, but that was a jam-packed hour. I want to thank everybody for texting and writing into us on our text question of the day and all those other great topics. I'll leave you with this. The 2009 SI article, and we're trying to see if we can get some updated numbers, but 78% of NFL players are either bankrupt or in financial stress within 2 years of retirement or ending the game. 60% of NBA players are bankrupt in 5 years. We're going to see if we can get some more recent numbers. Moving on, baseball, NHL, we've got NFL, we've got the Olympics coming around. So much to talk about, and we'll be covering those in the next few weeks. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Get to us, crushperformance.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
There's a lot of information that's going to come out of the combine from free agency talk, which all the agents have their convention. Just to give you an idea of what this is like. The agents have their convention this time of year. The video directors around the NFL have their convention this time of year. The trainers have their convention this time of year right here. The doctors, team doctors, have their convention this time of year. From a player personnel director standpoint, a lot of the scouting stuff, which I'm involved in heavily, am involved in that. There is some competition committee stuff, of which I serve as a consultant. There's a lot of that stuff that goes on that leads to the competition committee meetings in March at the owners' meeting. So, I mean, everything is done on site at Indianapolis. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on. The reason I mention that is you're going to have a lot of news with the calendar year starting in a week. About, you know, trade talks and, you know, rumors and who's talking to who.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.